The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll and powered by Geico. And speaking of powered, I've got a special treat for you today. Probably the biggest guests I've had from a worldwide pop culture icon standpoint. Rock and roll Hall of Famers who are so big, they didn't just need their own episode. They also needed their own sponsor and their own day. That's why this special rockin' episode of Talk is Jericho is dropping on a Monday. And it's brought to you by our fellow rock fans, Geico. So who's getting all the special treatment? Of course, I'm talking about AC/DC, man. Angus Young and Brian Johnson are here. I can hardly believe it myself. Thanks to Stacey Perro, my great producer, for working on this. We finally made it happen, and I'm so excited. And remember, if you don't have the new AC/DC album yet, you need to go get it. Power Up. It's probably their best record. Some people are saying since Back in Black. I'm saying at least since Razor's Edge. Power Up came out a couple weeks ago, hit number one in 18 countries. I think it's the best AC/DC record in years, for sure, like I said. And you can get it at acdc.com. But without further ado, let's get to Angus Young and Brian Johnson. AC/DC rocking right here, right now, and Talk is Jericho, thanks to Geico.
How are you, Ang? Everything all right, you son?
Yeah, still here.
Yeah.
Still on stage, yeah?
Yeah, that was great. That was interesting the other day, doing that video thing. You know, with that little ball in front of you that can travel in. Well, it doesn't travel.
Yeah, R2-D2.
Yeah, that's the fuck. That's the shit. It was great stuff.
Are you talking about the video for Demon Fire, the new video?
Yeah, we did some for that and some for various other ones, Realize and other.
It's the new way of making videos now, right? Because we're all scattered around the world, so you have to use the technology to make them.
That's right, yeah. They quarantine you, whatever that means. They put you with the animal pounds.
Yeah.
Come in the dog pound, he's small enough, you know.
But this is the new way of the new way of communication now, and it's also the new way of doing press. Back in the old days, you'd pick up the phone and call. Now you all have to be all make-upped up and have your hair all nice and combed and get on to see each other.
That's not going to happen.
Full Hollywood makeup here. Not since Frankenstein have you got something this useful.
We got a memo, and it said, "Turn up in black." No checks, no stripes, and no friggin' logos. I walked in the door ready to rob.
But you guys have been doing so much press because AC/DC is notorious for being very quiet and being close to the vest. But for this record, you guys have been everywhere. How has that been for you, though, Angus, doing so much talking? You usually don't do this much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I've got a little clock in the back of my mouth. Yeah, it's unusual. Yeah, because normally, you know, you make a record and then you get out and then you start strumming away on a stage. Mm-hmm. So it all kind of, everything kind of goes hand in hand that way. And we were prepared to do that. We were gearing up before that pandemic thing.
Right.
we actually had been rehearsing, and so when we'd done a few weeks of rehearsal, and so we were ready and rolling, and you know, we were just waiting on a, you know, to see where we would, you know, we were just going to do a few shows and see where we would actually play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rather than the big rehearsal room.
right. Yeah. But this is kind of the I guess the new way of touring, shall we say, because you released the new record. So in order to promote it, now we have to actually sit down and talk about it.
That's right. Yeah. We have to dream up new adjectives and adverbs and whatever, and not say words we can't say, you know.
Yeah.
Like hello, you know.
I've just become one big vowel movement.
All right.
You got to exercise those vowels, Brian.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And don't leave out the consonants, you know? And commas. And
commas and punctuation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you guys recorded this record a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So why did you release it now and not wait another 6 months or 6 months earlier, for example?
It was really down to, well, at the beginning, you know, when the pandemic thing, we were actually hoping it would have been out earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But we were gearing up for an earlier release. But then, you know, when that struck, it threw everything out of sync. Yeah.
Right. Thing was out of whack.
So we were basically, you know, our record company had said, well, we'll need to, you know, obviously put a hold on everything. So we really depended on them
to see what they want to do.
They gave us the word that, you know, this would probably be the best time, which was strange. Maybe they were hoping, yeah, we don't want people to see them.
But it was such a great surprise, though, because this has been such a strange year. And at the very end of it, here comes this secret announcement of the new AC/DC record with the old school billboards and posters on, you know, in front of your old high school and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You're like the last band that does it.
The school I didn't attend. Yeah. They were blessed, and so was I, you know.
Right. But people are excited about kind of AC/DC saving 2020 by putting out a new record.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that was a good surprise, you know, and it would, you know, hopefully, you know, tide people over until, you know, we get the world where, you know, everything gets back to, hopefully gets back to the old way of life.
So the Power Up album is out now and available at acdc.com. And I'm sure our friends at Geico are ordering a copy right now, Angus. But let me ask you, was it hard to sit on this record for so long, knowing that it was ready to go?
Brian can say it.
Well, for me, it was just, you know, when you know you've got something that you're proud of, like, you know, that you've done, and it's obvious you want people to listen to it. And that's what we do, you know. And then just sitting on your hands for like a year and a half, God, it's terrible, frustrating. Now I'm as happy as a bee. I'm jumping around doing all kinds of stupid shit because I don't have to pretend that we didn't make a record. You know, when people asking all the time, going, I don't know what you're talking about. So it's a big weight off your shoulders when you get it out. And I'm so happy with the way it went. Everybody's been fantastic and positive, you know, and we're just loving it, enjoying it as well.
Well, it really is, and you've heard it, and you don't need me to say it, but it's probably the best record that I've heard from you guys in a good 30 years. And once again, oh, so welcomed, and thank you so much for putting it out in this time frame. But the thing I really love about it, and you guys have discussed it many times, so we don't need to get into it, is the fact that Malcolm not only is with the band in spirit, as he always would be, but contributed the riffs or some of the riffs that you had written with him, Angus, over the years. Was making this record for you guys similar to making Back in Black after Bon Scott passed away, where you really had a different mindset to do something of a tribute almost, Angus?
Yeah, well, you do, you know, I guess, and Malcolm himself was always somebody who, you know, he battled all, you know, through, a lot of crisis, tragedy, and the way he did it, it was always, you know, he'd such a strong personality, you know, even after Bong's death, you know, he called me up and he said, what are you doing? And I'm just saying, well, I'm just sitting at home moping away, in a bit of a downer. And he said, well, we'll just get out there and do what we were doing before, which was, you know, making songs. And so the two of us just went away, you know, away and started working. And that's how we dealt with it. And that got us through. And then it was then up to the point where we decided what we were going to do, because we didn't know whether we would continue as AC/DC or what. We didn't know what was the future. So it was just a good way of, getting through that whole period. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty much the same, you know, with Malcolm's not being there. It was, you know, I put his hat on and say, well, what would he do? And I instantly knew, well, Malcolm would battle on.
Yeah. would continue forward.
Yeah. That's right.
I think it's one of those things, too, that a lot of people didn't realize over the years that Malcolm really was the driving force of the band, because you're out front being Angus Young and Brian's up front being the front man. Malcolm's always back at the amps, you know, but he was kind of the guy that called a lot of the shots for you guys.
Yeah, he was the commander in chief, more or less. I was the Commodore. There was a guy who used to work for us, and he used to always come in every night, and we'd go just before we get on stage, and we'd always say, "Hey, Commodore, you know, we got X amount of extra tickets. Can we release them?" And you know, he'd give me a whole story, and I'd go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Thanks, Commodore." And then one night he came in and he said, "Hey, Angus, we got some extra tickets and stuff." He said, "So, Commodore, should we release them and whatnot?" And I said, "Yeah." And then he turned to Mal and he said, "Oh, Commander." And he goes, "We got some extra tickets." And he starts giving him the whole spiel. And I went, "Wait a minute." And I said, I thought I was the Commodore. Yeah, you're the Commodore, but he's the Commander in Chief.
He outranked you.
Yeah. Brian, when you came into AC/DC at that point in time, did Malcolm have any kind of rules? And the reason why I say that is as a lead singer, as a front man, it's always your job to, you know, to work the crowd, as we say. But Bon and yourself, and even when Axl was in the band, the singer doesn't say a lot. There's not a lot of banter in between the songs. It's all about the music. Was that a Malcolm directive?
Basically, Malcolm, you know, just took us to a side and just said, you know, listen, we don't talk in between the songs. And I said, oh, well, he said, just
pretend.
just don't say anything. And I said, oh, really? I said, can I say hello after the first song? He said, once. And basically, he just said, they've come for the music, you know, and I always remember that. And he was deadly serious, but it was right. And as for the front man, it was great for me because Angus was always at the front. And whenever I finished a verse and a chorus, I would always get back and stand next to Malcolm, you know. And we did for 36 years because Malcolm was the same. Malcolm would never go forward unless it was absolutely necessary, like a chorus. You know, and even then, as soon as he finished, you know, back. He got out of there as fast as he could, back to where he was. He could keep an eye on stuff and
continue. The only time I ever saw him do come forward was really, I think, when we did that Zars show
with the Stones.
Yeah. They did that, and we'd only, I think they had said we had 55 minutes or something, you know, because there was a lot of acts on, they wanted to keep the show going. So Malcolm said, well, you better get us a clock. And they came with this huge big round, it looked like they.
That's right, I remember that.
and it was huge. He put it right next to him on the stage. And when it was getting near the time, he actually walked forward with the clock. And he was holding it to me. And he's going,
time's up, number one.
The Yeah, time's up.
God
bless. And it's about too long.
How about when it came to, I mean, the AC/DC is famous for the Hell's Bell and A Whole Lot of Rosie, the Giant Rosie, and of course the Cannons for Those About to Rock. Were a lot of those Malcolm's ideas as well?
Yeah, well, some of the, especially when we had the Cannons and stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the bell came basically, you know, it's really from the song title, Hell's Bells. And actually, when we had recorded it, you know, I had said, you know, it might be cool if we could get an actual bell sound on it. And, you know, when, first off, when you mention this, those kind of ideas, you get a lot of people kind of look at you and go, huh? Yeah. But I said, well, you never know. I said, you know, we don't know about the album. And you, I said, and there's a lot of people out there like Pink Floyd. They got a hell of a lot of effects going on.
That's right.
I said, so let's get that bell on.
I remember, Angus, can you remember when they tried to get the sound for it, for the actual record? And I think it was Tony Platt.
That's
had
right.
A, had to climb wow. up a church steeple with these on scaffolding instead of the vicar.
I heard also he had somewhere where there was tons of cows around everywhere, but they had a great bell. And then he went to a great effort to get it recorded, and at the end of it, it wasn't the right note, so they had to actually get a bell cast in the end to get the right note.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Make your own bell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I love hearing these Malcolm stories because I've always been kind of very intrigued by him and all of the stuff that he accomplished. But let's talk about Malcolm as a fighter, because there's a lot of great stories over the years about Malcolm getting into a fight with Geezer Butler, or Malcolm getting into a fight with some other guys. Are these stories true? Was he a pretty scrappy lad?
No, not really. Oh. He was just, you know, when we're growing up, you know, you grow up in, you know, like in your local neighborhood and stuff, you know. And he was just somebody, you know, you couldn't, if somebody was looking for trouble, they picked on the wrong guy, you know.
Right.
I mean? Because he acted quick and he acted very fast. And but the thing with Geezer Butler was, you know, I think they were drinking one night, and I think Geezer had some knife or something he was flashing out. And of course he flashed it at Malcolm. Malcolm took it off, you know, because there's a trick of that getting knives away from people. So Malcolm immediately did that and held in his hand. He said, "What are you going to do now?" So it was just a case of that. But Malcolm thought, you know, he woke up the next day and felt bad about it. So he thought, well, because we were opening for him, we were touring through Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, I better go into, you know, say sorry about the night before. And when he went there, he bumped into Ozzy, you know. And Ozzy said, "What are you doing here?" And Mal says, "Oh yeah, I can, you know, I had a bit of a run with the Geezer and his knife." And Ozzy says, "Him and that stupid fucking knife." He said, "No, don't apologize to me, Mal. Tell him to fuck off."
Malcolm.
Yeah. So the new AC/DC record is called Power Up, and you can get it at acdc.com. We're celebrating the album's release with Angus Young and Brian Johnson. Big thanks to Geico for making this episode possible. I want to talk about Stevie Young and how important it is for him to be filling in for Malcolm. Those are some huge shoes to fill, and he's done a great job.
Yeah, Stevie, yeah. I mean, because he grew up playing like Mal. So that was how he really got into, you know, getting his guitar together. And So he more or less just tuned into how Mal would play, you know. So, and it is a unique style, you know, because there's a lot of guitarists out there like myself, you know, who play a lot of lead notes and, you know, and they try to be flashy and stuff, yeah. And so finding somebody who's just a solid guy on a rhythm guitar and plays it with such a distinct style, you know, they're very rare and unique. You know, you only get a handful of those type of players in the world. You know, you get people like Richard, Ike Turner, you know, and I'm trying to think back, Steve Cropper, great. Yeah, I think the guy, the two brothers, is it Ray, Stevie Ray Vaughan, the late Stevie Ray.
Jimmy Vaughan.
You know, so, but they're a rare unit, you know. Pete Townsend, of course.
Of course.
But in that style, so that's the style Stevie aimed for, you know. And, you know, Malcolm had his own thing going, very, you know, distinct. And, it's just a unique way of playing. And Stevie was, you know, that was what his, you know, his Bible was. I've got to learn to get that. They're the chops I want to know. So, you know, really, and he filled in for Mal in 88, yeah. And he done, and it was Malcolm who got him in. He said, you know, he'll help while I go and get myself rehab, you know.
Right.
And Stevie, and he'd been gigging in his own bands for a while, so. And he came in and did a great job, and so it was really obvious, you know, that we, you know, if you were going to look anywhere, you know, I'd get Stevie in first because, you know, just that style of playing.
Because AC/DC is such a machine, too. It's such a rhythm machine that it's very hard. I was always laughing back when I was a kid, and people were like, oh, yeah, you know, you can play AC/DC, and it's like, no, you can't, because there's a real groove, and you got to be locked in, and you really have to understand rhythm and musicianship to get that.
Yeah, look, I've been doing it all this time now. I'm still learning. You know, so, you know, it's its own thing. Yeah, you've got to.
Sure. You
know, our job is, and my older brother told me this. My brother George, who produced a lot of our early stuff, he said the real art is making the complex simple. You know, that's what we always aim for.
And once again, kind of along those lines, having Phil Rudd return, how important is that? Because you've had a lot of, you know, Chris Slade is a friend of mine, did a great job, and Simon Wright, but there's only one Phil Rudd. There really is.
Yeah. You know, we go back a long time, and Phil is just, he naturally, that's his style. He plays like that. You know, it's just, you know, he instantly gets behind the kit, and, he just, that's how it comes out, you know. You don't have to really direct, you know. There might be the odd intro or something you might want to change in a song or do something. And but apart from that, when he just sits on that beat, you know, he sits on it, you know.
Brian, you agreed with that?
I just love Phil. And, you know, he's got this exterior that's like cool and hard, but he's just the nicest fella.
But he'd give Dirty Harry a run for his money. Yeah.
He's just, I just found him to be funny. He's one of the funniest blokes in the world. If you listen to him, he's, you know what I mean, Angus? When he's going,
very dry.
Very dry humor. And he just gets up behind them drums. And it just looks effortless. Mm. You know what I mean? It just looks like he's got a cigarette.
He does, yeah.
And it's like nothing's happening. It's just, you know, he's right on the punch every time. You know, it just gives you a kick in the ass. You know? He's brilliant.
He always had a great saying. I remember when I was young and you were playing some clubs and a lot of, you know, you got some good guys, you know, like, you know, club managers and other, and it'd be the odd ones or two, you know, that you would kind of not recommend, you know. And I remember somebody said something about one of these guys one night, and Phil just turned around and just, yeah, 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 lower than shark shit.
That was filthy.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think Malcolm said one time, or somebody was saying, AC/DC's made the same record, you know, 12 times. And Malcolm said, no, you're wrong. It's 13 times. Not great story, but not necessarily the truth. But what I find about AC/DC, and I'll ask you guys about this, if there was a giant party and there was rappers there and people who liked, you know, ska music, and there was dance music people, and there was rockers, and there was punk music people, the band that I would always stick on that would please everybody is AC/DC. The sound is universal. Nice. It really is. Yeah. Why? I mean, I don't even know if you guys can put a word to it, but why is AC/DC so universal to basically everybody?
Yeah, it's I'd love to know.
Please tell us, Angus, so we can all do it.
Yeah, over to you, Hank.
I think it's that if you can do something and do it, you know, with conviction and confidence, and plus it's that thing. My older brother George used to say, you know, if you've got a groove and you've got that going, then you've got the feeling of it. And he said, if you were doing a verse or something in a song, you know, he just say you keep that simple. He says, and then when you come with your chorus, your hook, as he would go, you go, you hit them with all you got. Yeah. But it was mainly, it's always that we've been really lucky that, you know, we've made a lot of, you know, songs, but, you know, we've been lucky that where we really strike a note with, you know, with a lot of people that we get to strike a chord.
I think it's because there's no message. There's no hidden message. There's no agenda in the music. There's no politics. It's music.
It's just music. And, you know, and it, you know, if you can tap your foot to it and have a little bit of that, you know. And people go on about lyrics and whatnot, you know. A lot of lyrics, it's usually good words that you can sing, and you can sing with, you know, and try and make it sound real, you know.
Hey, wop bop a loo bop a loo bop bop. Now figure that one out. Go on. Tutti frutti. Yeah, figure that out. You know,
figure out. One I saw the other day, I think, who was it? It was a song, and it was something like do 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 da da.
The Police. The Police.
The da da da. And I thought he must have been playing, you know, came up with that idea when strumming to Sheep or something.
As you do.
How about Ang? Nothing but a hound dog.
There you go.
Figure that one out.
That's right.
Brilliant. You can sing it. It's rock and roll. Who gives a flying fart?
It's rock and roll, man. Absolutely. You have a lot of that, though, on the new record. I love you've done, like, Realize. It's got, and Through the Mist of Time. And there's a lot of, you've always got those, and you have that, Brian. You're almost singing differently on this record than you have in the past. It sounds really good. A little bit different. There's some different tricks on there.
I don't know, man. I just went in and did the usual thing. What we have explained before, that there was a special presence there in a studio, you know, with Malcolm being gone and all of that. We're all shooting and rooting, and I probably like Back in Black, but it was no game plan. Nobody said, right, this time, come on. It was the same as we always do. But I don't know, it's maybe, you know, it's sometimes as you get older, you get a bit more bluesy.
Yeah.
Because you can't help it. It's just you've lived life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to sing the blues when you're 15 and say, you know, my baby left me. What do you mean, your fucking baby left me? You're still in your mother's tit, you know. So I don't know, you know, just the feelings that we're going through, thinking I would never be in this position ever again in my life. And then there was, you know, you just, I don't know, you drink it all in and you spit it all out, you know. And so And I enjoyed it, you know.
And when you're in a studio, you've got that environment. It's something. Yeah. Even when Malcolm used to always say to me, you know, here we are again, back in the box. You know, you never left. You know, it's almost like you get on. You've gotten on some. You know, you've gotten on a ship somewhere. And, you know, what's that? Flying Dutchman. You've gotten on that ship, and you go, here I am again.
Yeah.
You guys did a Twitter question and answer, and Geico didn't get to ask a question, but I did. I mentioned River Plate, and you answered the question, Brian, about just that crowd and how insane live at River Plate is. And sometimes I like to have a couple vodkas late at night, Brian, and I like to put on River Plate and just watch this fucking great concert with this crazy crowd.
I think it was probably for me and the whole band, probably one of the most heart-stopping moments. You know, when you look out.
Crazy band.
I mean, yeah, it was just. I mean, I think we paid them money. it was fantastic. And I remember the bit which I've seen a lot of when me and Angus on Rock and Roll Train walk up that walkway and we just look like we're surrounded. I don't know what, but just some aliens going, you're fucked, you know. And we were up there and trying to keep as professional as possible and doing, but you couldn't help but notice. I mean, just.
I know, that, and there's a thing in there with a jumbo jet comes flying in. When I was on stage and playing away, and I went, hey, they've spared no expense.
Man, that is good shit.
It was like one life force. Go ahead, Angus.
Oh, no, I was just talking about that scene. You know?
Well, of the people jumping up and down in unison, like 10,000 people on the floor or whatever it was.
Hey. I think it's, sometimes, and Brian will tell you this, sometimes you go to a show and it's almost... You're going in there and you can feel the energy coming from the crowd straight away. And I would say, now we're going to go spoil it and get on stage. We're having a ball before we get there. It's like you're going on the stage and you go, oh, they're already singing and chanting and everything.
Let's not ruin it. Let's get on and catch up.
is that one of the craziest shows you've ever played? Do other ones come to mind that were in that vein?
Yeah, you get the odd place, you know. And a lot of times that's usually, you know, sometimes you're playing somewhere and, you know, the crowd goes bananas and you wish you had the film crew there or you wish you had people there to record it, you know. That's probably the story of our life. You know, where was that camera crew when I needed them?
You know? They're there that night. Yeah. We lost another great guitar hero this year, Angus, in Eddie Van Halen. I think at one point in the late 70s, early 80s, Van Halen and AC/DC were the two biggest rock and roll bands in the world. And might still very much be. Did you have a lot of interaction with Eddie? Did you guys ever meet up or play together at all?
Yeah. We played, I'm trying to think back. Was it?
Was 84, Ang? Or 82, the first
time? We were on, in Europe.
Donington.
They did these, you know, festival shows, like Monsters of Rock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we were on, and they were on. So it was like we were the two of us together. So we were co-headlining it and we did a lot of dates through Europe. And as Brian said, that big festival at the time was that Donington. Mm-hmm.
Monsters of Rock.
And I remember once, actually, when Brian just joined, when we were just not long, we'd done the album and we'd been rehearsing in London and they happened to, they happened to be in London and he called, got a telephone call in the middle of the night. I just got back, was tired, started to sleep. My wife picked up the phone And she's talking away, and she's talking Dutch on the phone. So I think it must be somebody from home, you know. And it was Eddie was on the phone. And then she passed the phone to me. She said to me, so it's Eddie. And I'm going, Eddie the fuck? And then he's on the phone going, hey, man, you're a really bad motherfucker. And all this. And I'm going, yeah, but it's fucking 2 a.m. Can't I be bad, you know, like that breakfast? Anyhow, he said they were gigging there, you know, and he was asking if I come down. And I said, well, we were asked to rehearse. And I said, if I don't make it there, I'm sure I will hook up somewhere. And but it was there at Donington. He came in just before we were going on stage. And I was in there and I had my little school suit on and everything. And he come in and he was, you know, he was just all charm and, you know, full of warmth. Give me a big hug. Happy to see me. And, you know, because at first I was a bit shocked. I've got this guy going, you know, because he's talking like, you crazy motherfucker.
He's hugging you.
He's hugging me. And I'm going, careful of the hands. These are surgeons, man.
He's a good egg.
He was always funny, and it's sad because last time he came when we were in LA when we came out and we were doing the Black Eyes tour, and he came down the show, and there he was, same as ever, big hug, big warm, and big smile. So that's, you know, as a person, I always, you know, he was just warm and he was funny, you know. And he loved, you know, and like with Mal, he was there with Mal. Because he did, on that tour, he would go out and they'd go out to a couple of clubs and have a few drinks and stuff. You know. Mm. Go with Brian, hook up and have a game of darts. You know, he loved all that stuff, you know. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, too, because you got two of the biggest guitar heroes of the modern era, if not the two, and you guys both have completely different styles, to where Eddie was the king of the double tapping and the shredding. And you'll stick with one note for 5 minutes if you can, which is another great way of playing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. it is a different game, you know. But, you know, I always, you know, for me it was always, you know, I was always put in the place, you know, you did what the song required. You know.
It's Geico genius, though.
Yeah, if the song said, you know, one note or 50, you know.
Yeah, yeah. When I met Keith Richards once, I told him about a solo that he played, and he did the same thing. He said, well, just pick a good note and make sure you stick with it, but make sure it's a good one.
Yeah, well, there is only 12, you know what I mean? Yeah. I've seen some people go, how can I cram the whole 12 at once? You
know, yeah, that's right. There's a great clip online of you and Malcolm playing with the Rolling Stones, a blues tune called Rock Me Baby, which is amazing. How did that ever come about?
I think it's the first time we ever got the Stones had been in Australia. And it was during the day. And again, me and Malcolm were doing what we always did. We were sitting there in his little studio, you know, hammering away, trying to get tunes together. And there's a stage manager guy who called us up, who was doing their touring. And he said, you know, well, Keith, we want you to come down, you know, because they were rehearsing. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm said, well, yeah, well, let them rehearse, you know. And then, what time are they? They were playing. They were going to do a small theatre thing, you know, to open up their tour.
Right.
And anyhow, he said, we'll go down. So the two, me and him, went down that night. And we got there, and I think it was Ron Wood who grabbed us and said, oh, come, you know, keep waiting to see you. So he took his in, and Keith, I've never met Mal, I never met him before, and he was all excited to see us, and he was just, he is Keith Richards, he is very funny, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's almost, Well, him and if you see Jagger's the same, you know, they're kind of almost parodies of what, I don't know what you call that. They are who you think they are. That's how they naturally are. They talk like that. They act like that. And anyhow, what happened was, me and Mal said, well, we'll let you get ready. And we were just sitting out the back on a couple of flight cases. And Keith came out and he said, he walks over and he goes, we'll get you on. We'll get you a couple of guitars. Ronnie, get your guy to get the guy some guitars, you know. And he says, rock me, baby, he goes, you know. We'll get our guy to come and get you, and you know, and you get on. You know, it's easy, guys. It's in C. You'll pick it up. You know? So that's how we ended up, getting on stage with them. Yeah, but and I think the one they filmed, I think actually with some Desires. I think where they show us, getting on stage and jamming away. Yeah.
It's classic, a classic moment for sure.
I know Mick was always saying, can't we get that guy forward? You know, like Mal. he does three steps, you know. He does.
He won't move.
He won't move.
There's a great moment on your last gig you played where you grab Cliff Williams and you take him down the rampway, and he looked like he was going to explode if he went past a certain point. He was like, no.
That's right. The point of no return. I've gone three steps forward, no more.
Just as we wind down with the last few questions powered by Geico, Brian, I got to ask you, everybody always talks about Angus and the schoolboy outfit and where that came from, but what I've never heard is the origin of your fancy hat that you've been wearing on stage for almost every single gig since you joined in 1980. Where did that come from?
Well, it comes from the Northeast, basically, where I was born. And just about everybody wore them. And I remember I used to get very hot in these working men's clubs. It used to be very hot and sweaty. And I was used to sweat in my eyes. And my brother was there, and he had a fancy sports car outside with one of them, rakish hats on. He said, yeah, stick that on, it'll stop the sweat getting in your eye. And I stuck it on, and all the Geordie boys were going, hey! And so I just kept it there, and it was, I'm proud of where I come from. And the people up there are kind of proud that I still carry the little badge of where I come from.
The Geordie,
That's all it is, you know. And but honestly, I don't think I could go on without it. No, it's like me blue blanket, you know. I wouldn't know what to do.
I think it's it could be
sit on my blue blanket.
Last question for you guys, and this has been a blast. What's your, and it's hard to say because I know every song on the new record is like your children, but what's your favorite song, Angus, on the new record, and what's your favorite song to play live out of all the songs you guys do, if you had to choose just one?
Yeah. I think my favorite one on this album is probably, the opening track, Realize, because it was a for Malcolm, it was I remember at the time it was a kind of track that he worked up and he'd spent so much time on it at the time when he first came up with the idea of it. So, I think that track is probably my favorite.
It's amazing that never made a record before, because it's a great song.
It is, I always appreciated them. If Malcolm got, his ideas together, he could sit for days and weeks with that riff and play it away till he worked out exactly what was going to, what was going to hook together. So I used to always admire his perseverance with it, I like with me, with my ideas, I'm kind of very quick. I kind of You know, I get it together a few chords and they go, yeah, that'll do. I want the next bit now.
Yeah, you know? Next song.
I've got
next
that riff. I want the next riff. You know, yeah. I can't go back there. That's old news. I have to go to the
new song. Next part. And this one's for Geico. What's your favorite song to play when you guys play live?
There's so many to play live. I get a big kick out of them. Well, I know, but it's probably for Brian because he's got all the chops in it. I love playing Back in Black, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because it's that, you know, it's like my wife said to me once, you know, about songs, you know, how you get instantly, if you hear the Stones, you hear Satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And you've got the little guitar hook and whatnot. And I said, well, we got one better. We got it in one. You only had to hear that first one. And you know exactly who it is, you know?
You nailed it. That's the truth. How about you, Brian? Same question, powered by Geico. Favorite song on the new record, Power Up?
Well, I got to agree with Angus on the point of realized knowledge, but I have got a hell of a soft spot for Mists of Time, obviously, from Malcolm and Allah. But to play live, if you're talking about a new album, we were lucky enough to rehearse about six of them when we were in Holland, you know, when we were doing a thing. And Demon Fire comes up pretty good live. Because sometimes songs can fool you, you know, you think, oh, this is a great live song.
Yeah.
And then a song you didn't think might be great live just turns out to be a real, just natural live song. So, but I mean, they were all good. We did them all, you know, from Kick You When You're Down.
That's killer too, yeah.
You know,
Demon Fire's on there, it's deceptive. It's hung back there, you know. That's to wake you up, you see.
Yeah. Then we kick in, yes, when you're not looking.
Those of you thought that was all safe, and they go, oh, they're going to put us to sleep, then boom.
Kick in, yes, we realize, just when you're thinking.
That's it, man. Yeah, Demon Fire is one of those classic AC/DC songs that could be on Power Up. It could have been on Back in Black. It could be a Bond song. It's just got that attitude and that riff to it, you know?
Yeah.
Great stuff. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much, man. It was just a great time talking with you. And once again, congratulations on a great new record and great packaging, too. This one here with the little box that plays a song and all that.
Yeah, man.
What the hell? Yeah.
You lost it?
That little package.
What's the hat?
You got to be careful with that little package because I put it in the drawers and it goes on itself, that thing. Yeah? And you're going, where the hell did that come from?
That's just when you put your socks in.
Well, hopefully we'll get to see you guys very soon, man. And what a pleasure this was. Thank you so much. And I'll say this. As I get older, I realize that AC/DC is the greatest rock and roll band of all time. I really mean that.
That's real nice of you, man. Yeah. That's real nice, Chris.
Now, who's the worst?
Well, where do you want to start? I'm on this. I'm going to read the list right now. Here we go. Cheers, lads. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris. Angus, we'll see you, me bunny lad. All right, take care. Okay. I'm kind of weird to see these new videos, lad.
All right.
And everybody listening, and this includes you, Geico, pick up a copy of the new AC/DC record Power Up today. Oh, yeah. Go to acdc.com and crank it up.